everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It is February 2025, and you're listening to episode 434, which is a conversation about the book Cult Following, The Extreme Sects That Capture Our Imaginations and Take Over Our Lives. Today's guest is Lindsay Medenwalt. She is the Director of Ministry Operations at Mama Bear Apologetics and the author of Bridge Building Apologetics. She holds a master's in apologetics and ethics from Denver Seminary, a JD from St. Mary's School of Law, and a master's in public administration from Midwestern State University. Lindsay has written an exclusive online book review article for the Christian Research Journal, and the title of her review is Another Review About Cults, a review of J.W. Oker's Cult Following. You can read her review for free at equip.org. That's equip.org. Lindsay, it's good to have you on the podcast again.
Hi, Melanie. I'm so glad to be here again.
Well, one of the things that we've covered at the Christian Research Institute for many decades since it was founded in 1960 is cults. But it's not something that people are really talking about all that much anymore, although now and then something pops up. But a book came out last fall in 2024, which kind of went through a lot of the well-known cults in a new nonfiction book by somebody named J.W. Oker, and he has written this book called Cult Following. So who is he, and what is his story? Would any of our listeners know anything about him? I wasn't familiar with him when I saw his book come out. That was kind of highlighted in Publishers Weekly. That's how it first came to my attention.
Yeah, I honestly don't think I had heard of him before, except now that I'm reflecting a little bit further. I may have seen him in passing because he writes about some really strange things. And I tend to have an algorithm on my social media that sends me to weird things. And I think I might have seen some of the things he's posted before on social media. But I don't know if our listeners would be familiar with him necessarily. He has written several books. He's won a few awards for his writing. And it's not just nonfiction that he writes. He actually has written some young adult horror books. I think he has an adult fiction book that is coming out or just came out. But I think he's most well known maybe for his website, which is called the Odd Things That I've Seen or Odd Things I've Seen, Otis, where he talks about, he's got a podcast too, where he talks about some of the weird things that he's encountered in his life, but also some weird events that he participates in. I say weird, but it's like Halloween. He has a deep dive into Halloween and he tends to post a lot of things around Halloween. He just wrote a book about cursed objects, which I thought was interesting. It chronicles different objects that are apparently cursed that have caused problems in families that own those objects. And he also wrote one about monsters in the U.S. and which he calls cryptids. And this includes like Bigfoot, right? So I don't know. It's kind of a small kind of group that might know who Oker is, but I think if you know him, you probably follow him a lot because he talks about a lot of the same things that I'm interested in. I'm actually going to start reading, I think, some more of his nonfiction now that I've read this particular book.
Yes, it seems like some of the things that he's done are kind of like occult adjacent in
yes.
terms of things that he's interested in or different things that he thinks are is interesting or, you know, just kind of brings to people's attention. It just reminds me of that occult vibe, but more in a macabre way, not in a like a super dark way. It seems like it's
yeah.
kind of like
I think you can even see that in the cover of the book we're going to be talking about. When you look at the cover, you're like, that looks weird. But it makes sense once you start looking at his website and start looking at some of the things that he posts on social media. You think, okay, now it makes sense. This is just the vibe that this guy has. And once you put it all together, it actually makes sense that he wrote a book about cults.
So yes, we had Lindsay review his book that I was mentioning, and it's called Cult Following, and the subtitle is The Extreme Sects That Capture Our Imaginations and Take Over Our Lives, which is kind of interesting to me because he covers a lot of different groups, and he covers groups to me that are kind of like what I would call old school. We haven't talked about them in a really long time, but the Christian Research Journal has for sure addressed them, including people like the Branch Davidians and Rajneesh and stuff from the 70s. So I kind of Heaven's Gate. If everyone might remember, CRI was really instrumental during that time to have like national media in the 1990s when there was that big suicide with Heaven's Gate, because we interviewed the daughter of the founder. And so we talked about that, and Hank kind of really got into, Hank Hanegraaff, our president, really got into the whole situation with Heaven's Gate. And so all these kinds of things like Children of God, they seem to me, the things that he covered, a little bit, like I said, on the 1970s occult vibe. So tell us a little bit more about the book, because I was kind of interested when I did see it in Publishers Weekly, like, oh, he's like going back to the day and covering these kind of groups that we haven't talked about in decades.
Yeah, and that's kind of how the book is sold. On the back cover, it says, you know, it covers a bunch of quote unquote sinister groups, including the Branch Davidians, Heaven's Gate, Nexium, which is a newer cult actually, but that's kind of how he grabs your attention, is with these old school groups that maybe are just commonly known. I guess people who are interested in cults might know the name Branch Davidians or have an idea of who that group might be, or we've all heard of Heaven's Gate, or I think most of us have heard of Heaven's Gate, but it did seem like we were stepping back in time. So then the question is, what's new about this book? Why did he write this? Honestly, it's a book about cults. And cults are popular as far as people wanting to know as much information about these groups as we possibly can. It's sort of a fascination that our culture has. We want to know why people join these interesting groups, why they still exist. Why are you joining a group that tells you they can help you find your twin flame, for example, right? We talked about them, Melanie. They're not covered in this book, but that's a current cult that exists. We're interested in knowing more about small groups that people join and then do, some cases, really terrible things. And that's what this book does. This book does not do a deep dive into any cult. And it is just a big overhead view of what a cult is in Oker's mind. And I would call it in some cases simplistic, right? Because he doesn't really go into a lot of specific details, although—
I mean, is he religious himself? Is he any kind of organized religion?
He's not. He was raised Baptist. And you can see that in his writing, that he might have some feelings. We'll talk about this in a minute, but we'll see that some of his attitudes toward religion or organized religion seem to be negative. And he doesn't see a lot of differences between organized religion, including Christianity, and so-called cults. I say so-called cults because obviously that word carries a lot of baggage with it. And he does have a discussion in the book about, should we use the word cult? Should we call it new religious movement? What should we call a cult? And he lands on using the word because it is the most well-known word. But I would say that maybe some things that are called cults wouldn't qualify, which is maybe why he didn't include certain groups in the book. I was interested to see that he didn't include Scientology, for example. And that is probably one of the more popular groups that is being discussed right now as to whether it's a cult and what we should do with it. And he left it out of the book. And I'm not sure why. But I would say this book is a book about cults that people who are interested in cults will add it to their collection of books they probably already own about cults. And it's probably not going to add anything new to the things that they know necessarily, but it'll still be interesting for them.
We appreciate that you faithfully listen to the Postmodern Realities podcast and ask that you would help us out by getting the word out about our podcast. And the way that you can best do that is by rating and reviewing podcasts, particularly on Apple Podcasts, because most people are listening. I think 60% is what I saw of people listen to their podcasts either on Spotify or Apple, and Apple's where those comments and ratings are aggregated. Right now we have 86 of them. I would love to have up to 100 this year, but that might be too ambitious. But it would grow if you would have your voice in there, even if you just give us a star review and not a written review. But a written review is merely just one or two sentences. So thanks for considering that. Plus, this podcast is powered by your partnership. And one way you can do that, since it's absolutely free now, not under a paywall, no subscription, is to give us a tip. You can easily do that by going to equip.org and then going to journal at the top, clicking on that, then clicking on Postmodern Realities Podcast, and any of our landing pages will have a link to give us a tip. Well, back to my conversation with Lindsay Medenwalt about cults. So it's interesting, you're just talking about, you know, the different groups that he's put in it. And I found it interesting in the table of contents that he doesn't put in groups that traditionally would have been defined as a cult in terms of not holding to Christian orthodoxy and being like an organized new religious movement, for instance, Jehovah's Witnesses or other things like that. So I'm curious, how is the book organized and what is his intent to write it? Because of course it doesn't, like I said, include groups that traditionally people who are Christians would quote unquote classify as cults.
Yeah, I don't know who his target audience is, Melanie. I've read this book almost twice now through, and I'm still not sure if I'm part of his target audience, somebody who's interested in cults, or if he's trying to make more people interested in these kinds of groups. I don't know if he's hoping religious people will identify with some things and maybe leave their religion because of the things he's included in this book. I don't really know what his intent was because he's not real clear on that. I will say that he has organized it, as you said, a little bit differently than what I would have expected. And if I'm being honest, I'm not sure I love the way that it's organized. He divides his book into different sections based on what he defines are different types of cults. And in his mind, everybody who joins a cult is searching for something. So he uses that idea and splits it out into different groups, different things that people are searching for. And he divides it into searching for truth, searching for protection, for purpose, for salvation, and betterment. He does spend a little bit of time in the introduction for each section saying what he means by those things. So for example, in the first section, which is the search for truth, he says that people who join these kinds of groups don't believe experts like scientists or even traditional religious leaders like pastors. Instead, they're looking at information from the occult or modern messiahs or even extraterrestrials, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast, right? There is this whole following of UFO cults. And I would say that's not unusual even today to find in particular groups. And so that would be the groups that fall under search for truth. And he's named several that fall under that category. I don't know that I see much difference between the search for truth people and the search for purpose section, if I'm being honest, right? So I'm looking at both groups and I'm thinking they're still both looking for things, but how do I spot the differences? In his introduction for search for purpose, he says that people who join these cults are looking for their grander place in the world. Well, that's kind of not very specific. And I think we could put almost all cults in that category. And so that's my problem with the way that he organizes the book. It also makes it really difficult to find things if you go back and read it. So generally, if you're reading a book about cults, they will divide it by type, like this is a doomsday cult, or this is a cult that has to do with UFOs. And you can kind of remember where they land. In this book, they're all blended together based under these new kind of types of books or types of cults that Ocher has created. And that makes it a little bit confusing if you're going to use it more than once, right? If
also,
you're
just reading it through. I feel like in doing that, he kind of softens the horrificness of some of the groups, like Children of God and Nexium, that newer one.
Yes.
They are just like, first of all, Children of God sexually abused children.
Yes.
And then the other one also sexually abused folks. So it seems to soften some of the more horrific elements of some of the groups, perhaps.
Right. And you know what, Melanie? That is a big problem I have with this book. I think that in some cases, he is too lighthearted about the heaviness of this topic. As somebody who has read a lot about cults and new religious movements, and I know people who have come out of cults and have experienced that intense trauma, it almost feels like Ocher is too lighthearted and not taking it seriously enough. And that is really difficult for me as a person who takes this quite seriously to then look at this book and say, I'm going to recommend it to everybody. I won't. Because I might recommend it for somebody who just wants a basic overview of some of the groups that he talks about. But in general, it's not going to be one of those books that I'm like, yes, this is absolutely life-changing. You should read this book because he is so lighthearted about the topic. Like I have a friend who came out of a particular cult group that still exists, and I wouldn't recommend her to read this book. He doesn't cover her cult in particular. But I could imagine her reading this book and thinking, this guy does not care about me, even though he spends a lot of time saying he cares about the people who are members of these groups. It doesn't translate well in some of the things that he writes about. You're right. I think it does seem like he's not taking it as seriously as maybe he should.
So when we come to a book like this, especially for the majority of our listeners who are probably, you know, a Christian apologist of some kind, even if they're a lay person, they're interested in Christian apologetics, you know, how a Christian would define the term cult might be different than a non-Christian. Some non-Christians only define, non-religious people rather, only define them less about their beliefs, but more about their behavior, like maybe some sociological elements. So how does he define cult, and how would that be different than maybe how a Christian would define it? And then what does he have to say specifically about the people that join these groups, as well as the leaders of these groups? Because some of the groups that he's following, you know, that he talks about, whether it's Children of God, Roshnish, or, you know, Heaven's Gate or David Koresh, they do have like an overall leader type of a person. In terms of there is some kind of, even the Nexium cult, which is a newer one. And it was one guy that was this like kind of charismatic person that created this group. So how does he talk about those particular leaders as well as the people who would join them?
Yeah, if we look at the way that Christians look at the word cult, I mean, I'm even thinking of maybe how Walter Martin would have defined it in his book, Kingdom of the Cults, where he talks about groups that are formed under somebody who is misinterpreting the Bible. That's not really at all mentioned in this book by Ocher. Ocher doesn't really focus on the idea that they are separate from Christianity. Instead, he is looking at what scholars have said as far as, you know, dictionary definitions not being really complete. And what maybe psychiatrists have said about what a cult is. For example, he lists in his book three elements of a cult, And I mean, that's really narrow, right? Because there are a lot of elements to cults. And I don't know that we can really boil it down to three. But the three that he mentions are a charismatic leader who often becomes the object of worship, that there's some sort of indoctrination happening, and then exploitation. So those things all sound bad. And of course, they are bad. But there's a lot more that goes into what a cult is. But the emphasis on this book is on the scariness of how impactful cult leaders can be, not just in their groups, but outside of their groups, right? Because some of them are very violent. And we see that play out. We've seen it, you know, with the Manson family. I'm just going to throw the Manson family out. They were violent and committed murders in the name of being part of this cult. And so I just wonder then if we're maybe looking at too simplistic of a definition in this book. He does, one thing that I like that he does, Melanie, is that he does spend a bit of time defending cult members. And what I mean by that is he tries to get us to look at them as people who are looking for purpose and hoping to find community, right? And so this echoes a lot of what I see other cult experts say. He tries to tell people, you know, these are not just folks who are naive. They're not being taken because they're dumb. It's because they're being tricked to believe something by someone who they trust. And I think there's something to be said about that approach, because sometimes when we think about cults and we think about cult members, we might forget that they are human beings made in the image of God. We might forget that these are real people involved. And Ocher seems to want to change that mindset a little bit. He really focuses on the vulnerability that exists when somebody chooses to join a community that eventually becomes a cult. One of the things he says is we don't really set out to join cults. We're joining a group of people. We're joining a community. And then lo and behold, we've turned out to join a cult instead. One of the tensions that he mentions is what he says is a thin, blurry line between a religion and a cult. When I read that line, I realized that this book was probably not as objective as I was hoping it would be. And that's when I went to go search, you know, what is his religious background? What does he believe about religion in general? Is he approaching this with bias? And I think that his biases do come out a little bit in this book. That's a little bit concerning. But I think when we're looking at cults in general, we are looking for some big things like behavior control, emotional control, thought control. And while, you know, religions can certainly have aspects of that, no religion is perfect. We are all human after all. I think when we're looking at cults, we have to recognize that members are generally not allowed to look at information outside of their group. They can't listen to experts outside of the leader. They are not allowed often to even interact with their own friends and family. They're cut off. That's the difference between most organized religion and these groups called cults.
So you mentioned earlier that you've done a lot of research on cults and you have covered some groups for us, including Falun Gong. And so you're familiar with this subject. Did you learn anything new about these groups that you already knew something about? Or is this basically kind of a 101 primer? There's a lot of, you know, again, because we noted that he's covering folks that have been around since like the 90s or the 70s or, you know, the Children of God was like 70s. So it's been around for a really long time.
I would say yes, I did learn some things. I don't know that I learned enough to make it worth a purchase. Like if you've already got information on cults and you've done some research on cults and you already own some books, this might not be one that you need to add to your collection.
But maybe younger people might not know about it because it was like,
absolutely.
Children of God was founded in the 60s and it got really big in the 70s and stuff. So, you know, they might not know, some younger generations like millennials or something.
Right. And for that purpose, I would say this book is great. Because it is chock full of a ton of information. And he includes cults that I've never heard about. I don't know about every cult that's ever existed, of course. And I have heard of several UFO cults, but he mentions a lot of them that I didn't know about. And he also talks about a bunch of different groups outside of the United States. So a lot of times we hear about cults that come up in the United States, but we don't hear about the ones that exist outside of the United States. And he covers ones from Mexico, Japan, Canada. And I think that if we can recognize that it's not just an American thing, that cults exist only in the United States, that they do exist across the world, that allows us to realize, oh, maybe we are all susceptible to falling for this if we're vulnerable or if we're not on guard. But I would say that this book is great because it is kind of quick. It's an easy read. He writes really well. It's a quick introduction to a ton of cults. And it's going to be fast and furious. I think he only has a few pages, for example, on the Manson family. But I mean, whole documentaries and books have been written on the Mansons. He's only got a few pages on Heaven's Gate. He's only got a few pages on every cult that he covers. It's generally just a few pages. And so you're not going to learn everything. And you can't go into it expecting to learn everything. But I think you'll grab some things along the way. And it would be useful if you just wanted a refresher, if you were already interested in cults. But if you didn't know anything about cults, this is a great book that would kind of just sum everything up for you very quickly.
So we mentioned that he covers quite a few groups, and in fact, he covers 30 of them. And so that's a lot of info that he's putting into a book that's not that long, 250 pages. And of course, we talked about kind of the quintessential, at least in the cultural zeitgeist, everyone's heard of Branch Davidians for sure, maybe Heaven's Gate. But are there some other groups that might not be as familiar and that you were surprised that they were included?
Yeah, I was caught off guard by a few that he included, actually, Melanie. I already knew about several of the big name cults, but I was not familiar with, for example, one that was in Texas in the 90s, even though I grew up in Texas. There was a UFO cult that was in Garland, Texas that I did not know existed until I read this book. And I always equate when I think of cults in Texas, of course, I think of Waco, I think of the Branch Davidians and what happened, but I did not know that there was a Taiwanese man who started a cult in Garland, Texas, and claimed that God was going to appear on television across North America in March of 1998. I didn't know that that happened, and yet it did. And apparently they were big enough that this made national news, and people talked about that group. And of course, the prophecy failed. The leader, he was disavowed eventually, and the group disbanded eventually. That's what happens when prophecies fail generally in groups, is you see most groups will fail if enough prophecies fail, unless they come up with a new idea to explain why the prophecies didn't happen. Another interesting cult I didn't know about, and I'm still really trying to wrap my brain around it, is the John Frum movement. This was actually started in the 1900s in the South Pacific Ocean on an island there. And this one actually still exists, although the future is a little bit unsure and uncertain because the most recent leader died in 2021. But this one was started by a white guy who appeared to a group of elders on the South Pacific island. And the islanders said that this guy, who is known as John Frum, was more powerful than Jesus Christ. And he encouraged the elders and all of the people on this island to resist outside cultures. He didn't want them to be taken over by Christian missionaries, for example. And he wanted them to remain true to their own history and their own heritage and their own beliefs. And he said, if you pray to me, I'll make sure that goods are delivered to you. You have everything you need to survive. But that, you know, just keep me in mind as a sort of a worship. And they do. They consider him God. Well, flash forward to World War II, the Allied forces actually landed on this island, and cargo planes released cargo onto the island, which was for them fulfilling what John Frum had told them was going to happen. And after the Americans left, the war was over, after the Americans left, this group built places where airplanes could land and deliver more cargo, because they think that John Frum is eventually going to return, and they celebrate him every year in February. And so I didn't know about them. I didn't know they still existed, because I didn't know they existed at all. But I think what this book does well is it opens our minds to the possibility that these kinds of groups exist. Sometimes in our world in America, we forget that groups outside of America exist. We get focused on some of the things that happen here, and we forget about the world mentality. But recognizing that it's not just Americans falling for these kinds of things. And then how can we as Christians respond to these kinds of groups when we hear about them?
So is there anything that you did like about his approach to covering these groups in his book?
Yeah. So I think if someone knew nothing about cults going in and they picked up this book, this would be a really good way to start, right? To get kind of in a foot in the door and learn a little bit or a lot about these groups. And, you know, as much as I've studied these things, there were still some facts, things that I didn't know that he addressed in his book. For instance, so I have studied the Manson family. I've kind of looked into what happened there. I actually wrote one of my essays when I was trying to get into college all those years ago. I wrote an essay about Charles Manson and what it would look like if he became a Christian. And I remember, you know, studying him and the group that he controlled. And I did not know that the actress, Angela Lansbury, who I know for Murder, She Wrote, but I know she's famous from a lot of other things, she actually put her career on hold because her daughter was joining the Manson family. So she pulled her daughter from the group and moved back to Ireland so that she could keep her daughter safe. I did not know that happened until I read this book. So it's those kinds of tidbits that really kept me going. And I'm like, oh, well, I know that group. Oh, wait, I didn't know that. I also liked how follower friendly the book was. So I already mentioned that a lot of times we can have this idea that people who fall for cults or people who are in cults are almost less than us because we would never fall for that. But Ocher does a pretty good job of humanizing cult followers and helping us understand why someone might follow an abusive or tyrannical leader instead of leaving. For instance, he's got this whole section, Melanie, on a woman who survived two cults. I can't imagine surviving one cult, let alone surviving two. But there was this woman, her name was Laura Cole, and she was a member of the People's Temple in her early 20s. And she even helped create Jonestown. She helped build it, and she was there. But she was not there on the day of the massacre. She was actually doing a special project several miles away. So she was not there when the massacre occurred at Jonestown. But when she returned to the United States, she was looking for community and joined another cult called Synanon, or Synanon. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce it. But Ocher actually spends quite a bit of time describing that cult in his book. But it was a rehab group that eventually became a cult. And the lady who he describes as surviving two cults, she spent 10 years in that group. And it was a violent cult. They would perpetuate acts of violence against anybody who spoke negatively about them. There was one instance where they put a rattlesnake in a guy's mailbox. So when he went to go check his mail, the rattlesnake bit him. He survived, but he spent a lot of time in the hospital recovering. So in this section about this woman, he talks about what she said about her experiences. And it was interesting for me to read what she said because it almost seemed like she was reflecting on her time in those groups fondly. Like she was pleased with the memories, not necessarily for what they did, but because she truly felt loved and as part of a community. But of course, she does recognize true that those were not the best circumstances to be part of. And Ocher emphasizes that she was so idealistic and so desiring of a community that she was the perfect target for predatory cults. And that's why she fell for them. But this is just a normal lady that if you met her, she just died recently as well, that she would present as just your typical average American woman living next door, and then come to find out that she has survived two really horrible cults that existed.
You talked about a little bit earlier that he came from maybe perhaps a Christian background, but he isn't really religious. So did you find that his maybe kind of anti-religion or maybe bias against religion or maybe particularly Christianity, does that come through in the writing itself?
It does. Yeah. One of the things I did not enjoy about this book, even though his writing is compelling and it's interesting and you want to read it because it is good writing, it's got a good flow, is sometimes his tone felt off. And I'm not really sure how to peg that down, Melanie. It almost seemed like he was insensitive, even though he was trying to help us understand that followers of these groups could be you and me. We could fall for it too. And that's where I really struggle with this book, because initially I thought he was balanced and objective, but then he would say something almost framed in a lighthearted way that I would step back and say, wait a second, that's not good to include in there. So he talks about one cult, the Nawabian Nation, and he describes them as quite possibly the best dressed cult in the entire book. I don't know that we needed that line in the book to talk about the followers or to talk about the impact that cults are making in our society. I don't know that we needed to talk about what they wore or why that line was necessary. And at the same time, I think it's those lines that keep the readers involved in the book. When he describes the leaders of these cults, his tone is really dark and almost unforgiving. For instance, some of our listeners might know of the Remnant Fellowship Church in Tennessee. There was a documentary, I think, about it. It was in the news. But the cult focused on diet and thinness. And when he was talking, Ocher was talking about the founder, Gwen Shamlin's death, he said she achieved her ultimate goal, dying thin. That didn't need to be included. That was the last line in the chapter on that cult. And I just thought that was really insensitive. Now, I understand that that cult is an abusive group. And I understand that people suffered under her hand. And maybe that's why it's okay for him to talk about it, or he thinks it's okay for him to talk that way. But for me as a Christian, I walk away feeling a little unsettled by that tone, maybe because I wish that she'd found Jesus, real relationship with Christ before her death, and maybe had repented of her sins before her death. So I'm not sure that most people will be overly bothered by his tone, but I think there was something about it that bothered me. The other thing with regard to Christians in particular is he seems to bring up a beef with Christianity randomly throughout the book. And I'm not quite sure why he does it, but that seemed to bother me a little bit. And we can talk about that more in detail, but you could definitely tell he was not as objective as maybe he was trying to present himself. He doesn't include a lot of sources. And as somebody who writes a lot of nonfiction and a lot about groups or people, I tend to rely a lot on endnotes. If anybody reads any of my articles, they see I've got tons of endnotes to support the things that I'm saying and the things that I'm writing. But besides a very short selected bibliography, he didn't really include any sources. And honestly, the books that he included in the bibliography are all secondary sources about these groups. And he didn't include really any primary sources. And for me, if you're going to be writing a book, I would ex- expect legitimate sources throughout to show me where you got the information. I wouldn't have noticed this as much, except for the section on the Branch Davidians. So I have studied that particular group a lot. I have visited the Branch Davidian site in Waco several times. I've interacted with current Davidians about their relationship with David Koresh and what happened in 1993. And I've just really studied it a lot. And there is a line in his book, in Oker's book, that called into question basically everything I was reading in the whole book, because the line showed his bias and maybe his lack of research. And it made me wonder, did you research everything that you were supposed to do for this book, or did you just rely on specific sources for the information that you found? So I didn't check all the sources. I didn't check all of the information that he gave, Melanie, but I do want to say, reader beware, right? As we should do, we should check information that we're receiving. Do your due diligence. If you learn something new about a group, check it out. See where that information came from. See if you can find it backed up online or in other sources to see if that information is accurate or if maybe it's less objective than he would sell it to be.
Well, I do want our listeners to know that we, long time ago, many years ago, did a cover story on Gwen Shambling, and we did publish it back in 2001, I believe. And you can find that on our website, equip.org. But overall, you know, is this a book that you would recommend to Christians to learn more about groups they might be unfamiliar with?
Yes, but with a caveat, right? So I'm okay with the writing in general. I read a lot of non-Christian texts, and I'm not that surprised when people are maybe a little bit hostile toward Christianity, or in some cases, a lot of it hostile toward Christianity. I think that it's to be expected with this author. If you go to his website, you'll find various articles, and there's one where he gives sort of 10 behind the scene looks into this book. And one of them is that he was a Baptist until his mid-20s. But then he says, "Religion appalls and appeals to me, and I will never blame anybody for being in one, although I will poke fun at them for it." So he's laying his cards right there out on the table for us. He is going to poke fun, and some people might find that a little off-putting in this context because it is such a serious topic. And like I said, some of the times that he talks about Christianity, it does seem to come out of left field, like, oh, but that didn't have anything to do with this cult. Why did you bring that up? But if you know where his biases are, it makes a little bit more sense. There is one thing I want to draw attention to, Melanie, that bothered me. It still bothers me. It's one of those lines that I keep ruminating on, and I might end up blogging about it extensively. But there's a line at the end of, I think it's in the John Frum chapter, and he says something along the lines of, "When it comes to belief, what is truth really? Is it possible to know? Does it even matter?" And my answer to that is all of it matters. You know, it is possible to know what is real. And if we look at the objectivity of Christianity, for example, we can really know it's true based on extra biblical sources, not just what we find in the Bible, but history, archaeology, and other things. And it matters because it matters eternally if it's true. This is a topic that's near and dear to my heart as a Christian apologist. I want people to have this eternal mindset. Yes, we need to be present. Yes, we need to be thinking about Christ in our lives right now, but what is the kingdom-minded focus? And that's eternity. And I feel like we can't make this a secondary issue. Truth should be a primary issue for Christians. And that line in Oker's book, I struggle with it. He's not a Christian, so I can understand where it's coming from. But as a Christian, we should grapple with sentences like that one.
Well, this has given, I'm sure, our listeners a lot of food for thought. And it's been a while since we've talked about, I don't think I've talked about the Branch Davidians or since the 90s. But on a much lighter and fun note, you know, in the United States, we have all these random observance days. There's an observance day or holiday for everything. And one of the holidays or observance days we have in the month of February is Take Your Child to the Library Day. So do you have a fun library memory, since you're somebody who reads so many books? Do you have a memory from your childhood or maybe taking your kids to the library?
Yeah, actually, one of my very first memories is in a library. We were living with a librarian up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and sometimes she would take me to work with her. And I think I was maybe 3 or 4, but I remember sitting in the children's section surrounded by board books and just reading all day long. And it was so fun to me. And so I get that nostalgic feeling every time I walk into a library. It's just so fun for me to actually walk into a children's section and see it and know that for other kids, that might be happening too.
Well, that is a very fun library memory. And thanks again for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks, Melanie.
You've been listening to episode 434 of the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Today, I was joined by guest Lindsay Medenwald, who has written an online exclusive book review article for the Christian Research Journal, and her review is called Another Review About Cults, a review of J.W. Oker's Cult Following. You can read her review for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org.
You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.